Last July, I preached a sermon called Science and Religion, How We Raised Two Biologists. Well, this is part two of Science and Religion, and you'll probably get in part three and four later on, but I don't know when. But today is part two. Well, when people we don't know well, find out that both of our children are biologists, they seem surprised that the children of two clergy people would wind up in science. And some are further puzzled to learn that both study and teach evolution. And you're okay with that? I love this part. You know, I love this part because I love for people to know that science and religion are not mutually exclusive. You believe in evolution, they ask? And I respond, well, evolution is not a faith statement. It is not something I believe or disbelieve. It simply is. Do you know what is required for a scientific theory to actually become a theory? Do you have any idea how much postulating and experimentation must be done in order for someone to say, I think this looks like a real thing? Many people assume a theory is simply a completely unproven notion that somebody has about something. Oh, that's just their theory. But that is not what a scientific theory is. A scientific theory is built upon a foundation of repeatable, provable facts. Our son David teaches evolution. We like to call it devolution in our house. He teaches evolution to undergrads at Harvard, and he writes that evolution, so I'm texting David again, and he texts back, and this is what he texts. Evolution is at the heart of understanding most of biology. At its heart, evolution is simply saying that organisms can change. That's good news. Organisms can change. Understanding how they change lets us better understand their interaction with other organisms, their role in the environment, and even predict how they might change in the future. He's a good teacher. People may say, well, I don't believe in evolution, but they benefit from the resources it produces. If you take any medication on a regular basis, if you have received a vaccine of any sort, it is the result of the application of evolutionary theory. Thank you very much. As Neil deGrasse Tyson says, the good thing about science is that it's true, whether you believe it or not. The two creation stories, yes, remember, there are two creation stories in Genesis, were understood by the early church, that's thousands and thousands of years ago. Early church leaders understood it as theology, not science. The people of the early church, they knew science, astronomy, math, and engineering, right? Yay, go engineering. They held those in high esteem. The sciences made possible incredible construction projects of monumental proportion, buildings, plumbing, yeah, even plumbing, and roads. Origen, one of the early church fathers, was very clear to describe the creation stories as theology, not historic or scientific fact, but as theology, how God is. How is it that in our age of advanced scientific discovery, many Christians have become hostile to science? How is that? Our forebears in the faith were much more open to scientific inquiry and discovery than many currently are. This antipathy towards scientific discovery and inquiry seems to generate a stubborn unwillingness to accept the overwhelming evidence that human activity is impacting this planet upon which we live and supports all life. Remember what David said about interaction with other organisms? their role in the environment and predicting how they might change in the future. Remember that? Is humanity so exceptional that our presence has no impact on the other organisms that inhabit the planet? Are we so special that we have no impact on this island that we call Earth, suspended in space? One of the reasons people say, one of the many reasons people say they stay away from church, from Christianity, is this vocalization from Christian people, from Christian communities, that evolution is hooey, science is suspect, and climate change is a hoax. The overwhelming evidence is to the contrary. And most people just don't want to suspend that much reality to walk through a church door. I don't want to suspend that much reality today. I think I'll stay away from that group. Now, granted, we're not all like that, but that's the vocalization that's out there most of the time about what Christians think. There is a group of Christians in Idaho who currently have the right to not seek medical assistance for their children. They believe medicine is an instrument of the devil. That's true. The State Assembly of Idaho passed legislation some time ago that gives parents the right to not seek medical help for their children if it's against their religious beliefs. Don't mess with my religious beliefs. This community is a community of continual grief. In the last 4 months alone, children have died every month from curable disease. It's a community of continual grief. And they get up the next day and say, it's God's will. The worldview of these Christians includes a hostile view of anything related to science, and their situation evokes in us both, I think, disbelief and sadness and compassion for where they are. This is an extreme and tragic result of such antipathy. This story was reported in newspapers around the country. It also supports existing biases that non-Christians have toward the Christian faith. Read this. Look at those Christians going again. We must do better. There are Christians who firmly believe the earth must be destroyed as part of God's plan. It's part of God's plan. The earth gets destroyed so Jesus can come back. This theology continues to be popularized in movies, in books, curriculum even written for children. Yeah, this gets taught to children. Yeah, the earth's got to be destroyed. We must do better. The resurrection story in John's gospel hints that the location is a garden. Jesus is mistaken by Mary to be a gardener. No other gospel makes this claim, makes this allusion. It is an intentional theological connection to another garden, right? The Garden of Eden. The Gospel of John draws back the curtain on the garden redeemed by the resurrection of Christ. Reality's transformed. Creation itself has risen, and the tree of life is emerging, transformed in the garden of resurrection. Jesus is the gardener who transforms our lives now and becomes at the same time the ultimate gardener where we meet the God of life anew and profoundly. The resurrection garden is the dwelling place of God. Those words were written by Robert Shore Goss. He's a senior pastor at a local church, North Hollywood. He's a scholar, too. The resurrection garden is the dwelling place of God. Christ is the tree of life rising out of the ashes of death. And the church is focused on sin for so long. And I'm not saying we shouldn't deal with sin. You know, there's a time and a place for that. But there's been this focus on sin that has kept us stuck at the cross. But the saving grace and power of God is not in the cross. It's in the garden. It's in the garden of resurrection where the cross is being transformed even now into the tree of life. Don't get stuck at the cross, because the tomb is empty and the garden, it's blooming. In the second creation story in Genesis, the woman has a conversation with what we are told is a serpent in a tree, and this tree is the knowledge of good, has the fruit and the knowledge of good and evil. And they have this conversation. She says, but we're not supposed to touch that tree. And the serpent says, but it's so good. Why should you be left out? Why should it all be given to your God? You should have knowledge of good and evil too. And guess what? Right? Guess what happens? Both she and that man person, though, they take a good hunk out of that fruit. And they have their eyes open. They went their own way. They went their own way. But Mary, when she is asked to not touch Jesus yet, because he's not yet completely transformed, ascended to his Father, she follows directions. She respects the request of the one who asks. She brings to life the Easter proclamation of life. Mary of Magdala and the other disciples were called to follow in the footsteps of Christ the gardener in this gospel. They were invited to participate in the mission of co-creating, co-participating, co-living with the Spirit in giving life to the garden. I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. In the meantime, I leave with you the Spirit, the Advocate, who will be with you, living with you, creating with you in the garden. We are giving life to the garden in this place and from this place. We are being a power and a presence for change. At the March for Science in Boston was this sign. Was posted, it's posted as an equation, so I'm going to explain it if you can't quite see it. Mass times acceleration equals force, or power. So it says, be the force, square root of 16 is 4, and that's a delta, which in math is used for the word change. Be the force for change. Got to be a mathematician. I had to have that interpreted to me by a mathematician. Be the force for change. Be the power for change. And we are doing that here. This congregation has for 20 years, over 20 years, been making step-by-step changes in order to live more respectfully on the land God gives us to co-create the garden of resurrection. Now, we aren't carbon neutral, but we continue to reduce our impact. LED, let me tell you, LED lights are not hot. It is so much cooler up here than it used to be. High efficiency lights in the fellowship hall and in classrooms everywhere else. We've got LED going. When other disciples worship here, they are astounded. I have people come up to me and say, you use glass communion cups? People don't use glass communion cups. They use plastic. And you have real coffee cups? I know they're chipped a little, but hey, they match. And they're not styrofoam. And we have a high-efficiency dishwasher. It's great, unless you open it during the rinse cycle, which I do not recommend. Raise your hand if you've done that. Yeah, we've got some sprinkling baptisms going on in our... There are so many other ways. We've re-landscaped. We've taken out all the brownish-green lawn, and we put in drought-tolerant, and we're using less water, and... We've got an orchard that we've been growing for 5 years, and almost all of the fruit is used for our house shelter. And yeah, we got to get political too, because public policy makes a difference in how the land gets used and how people treat each other. Public policy is making a difference for children in the state of Idaho that I don't think is healthy for them. and it needs to be changed. That's public policy.